Welcome to the Currency.News podcast. It pays to be curious.
Ireland is something of a paradox, a surging economy with massive infrastructure shortages, a rich country that often lacks the capacity to deploy the sums of money it has at its disposal. And this is particularly evident in the area of capital projects. But just what do you need to do to bring in a major capital project on time and on budget? And that's what we're going to discuss in today's podcast, where we're going to examine Ireland's capital infrastructure projects, Metrolink, Lewis Extension, rail, energy, water, and how these are going to be delivered through the support of international construction firms. And to do this, I'm delighted to be joined by Aidan Scollard and James Smith. Aidan is a partner with Baker Tilly and an expert on delivering large-scale infrastructure projects. And James is a partner with MHJ, the Baker Tilly firm in London, and he specialises in global mobility. Gentlemen, you're both very, very welcome.
Thanks, Ian. Great to be here.
Sorry, a lengthy intro, but it's a big topic, Aidan. I'm going to start with yourself. It is a big topic, delivering big projects on time and on budget with the right people. You might just talk to me about your own work with construction firms and major capital projects so we can ground it.
Yeah, so I suppose my background, I would have worked with a number of construction companies and house builders here, and also on some of the infrastructure works on the original Lewis lines that came in. That involved a lot of international companies, so there would have been some JVs set up at the time where maybe specialist works which needed the international company, say on the Lewis line it was catenary works on rail track laying. So I think we're going to see the same again with a number of projects coming up. I think local civils works and the sort of general mobilisation for those can happen with the Irish construction company. But for some of the specialist works, this is going to be large-scale international companies that will assist on that.
Yeah, and we'll tease through all of those issues. But just in relation to your own background, Aidan, I mean, you've worked on many, many projects over the years.
Yeah, I suppose on
not just in Ireland.
Not just in Ireland. I mean, we would have advised, obviously, as a firm on various projects. We would have, in a previous firm I was in, we would have been involved in some of the PPP projects for the accommodation. So that would have been both advising government and then on the developer-led side as to delivery of projects. Obviously, the accounting around that and the structuring piece. Okay. The large-scale projects, obviously, infrastructure is hot on the agenda at the moment. So it's back online again where a lot of these companies need assistance around coming in here to Ireland for the first time, the structuring piece, the delivery, maybe the tax efficiency and moving people in as well. So they're all the pieces that we have looked at before for other clients, whether it has been some of the rail pieces, as I was saying before. Rail is, I suppose, probably foremost in my mind at the moment because that's where a lot of the initial spend is happening now.
Yeah. James, just to bring you in here because Aidan mentioned people. You're a dreadful pun, but a people person. You're in the people business, people mobility. You might just explain to our listeners what that means. So what it is you do on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, absolutely. So essentially, the idea of global mobility is facilitating the movement of people across a border. So really what I do is I help employers who have some form of international workforce. So these may be business travels, long-term workers, permanent relocations. But essentially, how do you move someone across a border? How do you pay them once they've moved? Where is their compensation actually going to be taxed? Where is Social Security going to be due? And then thinking bigger picture as well, how do you make sure that that employee is in a good place from a personal perspective, a family perspective? And then
there is a lot of issues there when you say it like that, you know, because these are skilled workers who we want to have in the country or whatever country it's, you know, and then it's trying to accommodate them in the right way.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've got a total different type of workforce in so many different positions that you need to consider, because we could have construction workers, we could have surveyors, engineers, and they all have differing needs. We have different businesses that have different timescales for how long they need people on site. So all of that needs to come together. And then one of the particular focuses as well is, you know, the finances behind this. So it's not just getting someone in place. It's actually, how much is this going to cost me? And how is that going to affect my budget and timeline?
And when you're dealing with people, I mean, how does that process work?
So essentially, we start at the beginning and we plan. And I really think that planning point has to be key. If we take this from an international movement perspective rather than, say, a purely domestic, we have the UK is a big provider of resource, or can be, for Ireland. We've got the common travel area there, so that's a relatively easy route. We've got the European Union. Thinking of where we are now, it's a very different place to, say, 20 years ago, where labour was in a different place. But if we have third countries there that we need to get labour in, how do you get them in? Immigration, work permits need to be considered. Does the current structure with government and sponsorship allow for that type of labour to come in? So it's really starting at the beginning and planning who's coming, but then also what's the cost going to look like for that? So it's working with these employers to say, actually, what do you have to pay someone in Ireland? What's the compliance cost of that? What's the regulatory points that you have to consider? And then how do you get them there? And then how do you facilitate all of this? So putting something in place after it's happened is not really going to be the best route here.
It's funny, and I can see the joining the dots already, Aidan. Mm-hmm. I know you're nodding there. But obviously, you're involved in bringing on board large-scale infrastructure projects. That requires people. We keep on getting told there's a skill shortage in Ireland. And I suppose this is one of the areas, that more cross-border collaborative process.
Yeah, I think opposed to many other industries, for infrastructure and the construction pieces that are going to happen, you need physically to have people here. A lot of this work cannot be done remotely.
It's not remote working, it's not coding.
No, this is not working from your bedroom, no. So for this sort of work, it really is moving a lot of people in. I mean, obviously the design phases and some of the early phases will be done by professionals, and that may be happening on a remote basis. But once you get into the sort of, whatever you want to call it, shovels in the ground, boots on the ground, shovels in the earth, you really need people here. That's why I suppose I've seen, and with the interaction back and forward with the UK, there are a lot of, say, world-class Irish infrastructure companies that have established themselves in the UK, and they've done work on a lot of these large projects, HS2, Crossrail. They're looking to come back again. They're looking to do works here. Some of the works at the moment, say HS2, continues, and I met some companies at an event the other evening, and they're continuing to do work on HS2. There's still tunnel works and there's still ongoing station works to happen. But the pace of some of that work has been slowed by the British government, because the spend is not going to be deployed as quickly. So some of those companies will have capacity.
So there is that sort of opportunity. Because as I said at the start of this, you know, for now anyway, we'll see what happens with tariffs and Trump and trade and everything else. We have big surpluses and an infrastructure deficit, and we want to be building these things.
Yeah, and for these things to be built, I mean, there needs to be capacity in the market to do that. So the capacity may be coming out of some of these large-scale tier one contractors and the subcontractor flow that happens behind that. Some of those may be companies that have been working in the UK. Maybe some of the work is slowing up or it's getting redeployed. So the ability to, I'm not saying we're going to get it at a huge cut price, but we are going to be able to avail of that capacity where those companies can come in and do that work here in Ireland. For some of the works that are going to come up, very specialist, the tunnelling work here, say for Metro, is probably only half dozen companies in the world that could do that. And to do that, they have a long lead time. Planning for tunnel boring machines, it's not a case of they're just going to switch that on next year. They need to know years out. And there's also other opportunities for those companies. If they don't do Ireland, they'll maybe go to North Africa or whatever might happen.
So how do we, as a country, and we all acknowledge we need more of these projects, and I'll come to you, James, in a moment, but more of these projects, how can we make ourselves more attractive?
I suppose one of the interesting questions I've had from one of the companies from the UK we've spoken to is they said, yes, we can see a pipeline of the next few years of projects or the next 5 or 10 years. But what does it look like for us staying here for 20 years? And I think that's the part that we need to answer for those companies. Yes, there might be a metro project, there might be all these Lewis extension works, the various rail projects. But what encourages these companies to come and set up and stay for 20 years? They're not going to compete or stop any of our local Irish civil engineering companies. These are complementary companies to what our companies already do here. This is a great ability and capacity for some of our companies to learn from those. On an international basis, as you've seen, a lot of the Irish companies have now emerged as world leaders in, say,
data centers. Absolutely. And we've built so many of them all over. We've taken that expertise in Ireland and transported it.
Yeah, and we have clients that, I suppose, originally maybe out of the UK, Irish companies that have done data centers here, and now they're moving further into Eastern Europe, in towards Germany and Poland. Seems to be a new location for some of those. So again, the skills that are there that they have built up, you know, those Irish companies will now go into the likes of Poland, where they will need, say, local civils companies to assist them. But the expertise that they have built up in their knowledge base from what they have done here, and for some of those larger companies that they've worked for, say in the data centres, they will want to pull them across various jurisdictions as they go. So I think there's great opportunities for our Irish companies to learn and, I suppose, co-work with these international groups.
Yeah, and it is that collaboration piece, James, but that requires people. So you want to get them to move. Now, I appreciate people get from your accent. You're from New Zealand, living in the UK, but you're here in Dublin today, so thank you. For us to get the right type of people here to do the sort of projects that everyone acknowledges we need to do, what sort of steps do we need to be taking?
I mean, I think there's a couple of points here. One, there's this long-term plan. So if you don't know what's going to happen in 5 or 10 years' time and you can't commit to that, then it makes people planning in Ireland very, very difficult. You know, are you bringing someone here for 1 year, 2 years, or is that person going to be here potentially longer, a decade?
And again, I have to stress, this is skilled people. It's not, yeah. It's not just labour, which is also important, but this is at a high level.
Yeah. And so when we start thinking of the company planning or the business planning, we also start needing to think about the person. And we need to start thinking that a person has a personal life as well as a business life. So they've got that consideration that needs to be at the forefront of the mind. If you move someone across a border, you're disrupting family, you're disrupting finances, you're changing pension schemes, their finances. There's so much that comes into it, but you're also giving an opportunity, you know, the career progression.
But it is emotional for people to move, and you've done it. You've moved. Like, it is an emotional thing, you know.
And it's one of the things that's on my LinkedIn profile that at the top of it, it says, I know what it's like to move across a border.
Yeah.
I was in New Zealand 2 weeks ago seeing my family because they live 20,000 kilometres away. And that people aspect is incredibly important. But as part of that wider incentivizing of employees, you have, you know, you can pay someone more. And that's easy to do. You know, you've got to fit it into the budget, but it's an easy solution. But there's a lot more that you can do, from cultural planning, fitting people into the business, understanding what their career could look like in that location, or also things that can be disincentivizing employees. So is something going to be overly complex? Is it going to disrupt their social security record? You know, can they get access to benefits that they formerly would have had, which may be disrupted? So yes, you can pay someone more, but you need
to think wider.
Yeah, you need the warm and fluffy as well as the financial.
Yeah, I think a lot more people have worked somewhere else now in their working career. I worked in the UK, I worked in Belgium for a while as well in previous life. So, you know, you start to appreciate the changes that people need to make across their lives, where they have families, children, schooling, housing, all those issues that come up. I mean, the accounting and the tax piece is maybe the easiest part that we can solve for them. But there's all those other issues that are real-life decisions.
But beyond that, so the sort of projects you're talking about, and we're talking about the metro and all these big multi-billion-dollar euro projects, like, there's no Irish company can do it on their own. There's it's always a link-up that needs to, you know, there's contractual issues, how you engage, how you mentioned PPPs. Mm. There's a lot of complexity there.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose even from the event I was at the other day, I mean, there's a big tunnelling project to happen for the metro, and a lot of the UK companies and some of them European. There's a couple of big French tunnelling companies that would probably also look at this. But if they're looking at those, say, M400, the capacity projects for those, there's, you know, it's attractive internationally for them to come to these. But a couple of questions that they ask, like I'm saying, is the long-term piece. But also, you know, they've seen before that this has raised its head as a potential to happen and then it's gone away. So there are two questions that
we've been talking about many, and this is the big issue, right? We've been talking about many of these projects, like the metro, for 15, 20 years.
Yes.
And I suppose people need certainty.
Well,
companies
yeah.
need certainty.
The two questions that I get asked when I'm talking to those companies about it is, will it happen this time and will we get paid? Now,
it's funny, it seems very simple.
But that's what it boils down to. So the view is that, yes, the Irish government has the money this time. We've had significant tax takes over the last few years, so there is the capacity there to do this. Obviously, the metro project will probably be a PPP. Some of the other projects, say the electrification of the rail lines, that will be all be from self-funded from government. So the, I suppose, ability to encourage those companies to come over, I mean, I know there's all those other parts around it, but fundamentally it comes down to how long are these projects going to be? Will they really happen in the timeline that we're talking about? Because for those companies to plan, and then when they happen, are we surety of payment at the end? And I think, you know, various infrastructure projects have happened. Some of them maybe run over time, run over budget.
Over budget, yeah.
But this is probably a constant thing. I think there's very few very large infrastructure projects that come in on time and come in on budget. But some of it, I think, is around that planning piece. If you change your scope or planning after the event, then you're going to pay for that on, both on time and on money.
And how often, it's funny, Stephen Kinsella, who was an economist who wrote for The Currency and is now the economic advisor to government, always made the point in his columns, when do you ever regret building something? You know, a large scale, maybe once, but a large scale project will always benefit the country.
Well, I mean, if you're going back and forward, say, to London, I mean, some of the infrastructure there, especially the, if you look at the tube there, it's over 100 years old. It's still there. So, you know, you could say what we're doing now, and some of the companies are very, very interested because this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. The best time to build is today. It doesn't get cheaper. It doesn't get easier the longer you leave it. So that's why I think with the push behind it now, it really is maybe that once in a lifetime that we will look back and say 50 years from now, 100 years from now, a lot of the infrastructure that we put in now will still be there. We're paying a little bit of the cost of, say, the infrastructure, say, on water, where the Victorians originally put it in. We probably haven't maintained it to the degree it should be. But if you look after that infrastructure, it lasts for generations.
Yeah. James, just pushing, not to get into the weeds too much, but we need to get into the weeds a little bit. There's immigration issues, there's contracts, there's income tax issues. All of these things are on people's minds.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think what I see time and time again is that when we have big projects that happen, so we have all the different people are involved from the planning perspective, the government, the contracting and everything. But that people element is often the secondary thought. People get boots on the ground before...
Win the contract and then we'll figure it out.
And then we'll figure it out. And we have boots on the ground. And then they call up the tax people or the global mobility people and say, right, we've got these people in X location. What do we do? Well, it's actually, well, what should you have done already is the point. But I'd say... we need to start thinking really early about who needs to be involved and what needs to happen. I think so often the people element is seemingly with HR, but we also have things like payroll. So how do you pay them? How's the tax going to be paid? So all of these different parts of a business need to be involved from the beginning. Then, I guess, when you're thinking in that international context of how do you get someone in, and I mentioned before that EU, UK might be easier, but third countries... it's going to be harder and there's going to be a timeline that needs to be met. If that's not thought of right at the beginning, then that timeline is going to be missed. And then we have things like payroll and you've got to set that up, or do you have to set up a branch or a subsidiary? And again, that takes time and effort. And if you miss deadlines, revenue is going to come knocking and say, not only is there tax, but
That's a certainty.
But you add taxes. Interest as well. So. Yeah.
That point, I'll put it to both of you, but that obviously, if we're having joint ventures, we're having international firms, it gives opportunities for Irish firms to link up with big companies, but they need to make sure they're in the right place as well to be dealing with this.
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of these cases, especially in construction industry, there's a primary company or a main contractor who will also have subcontractors below them. I mean, the number of times that we've had these discussions with companies have said, like you've indicated, we've won the contract, we've come in, we've done the work, and then they come to us and say, yeah, but this guy's been here and you know, he's been working here for a while. And then you say, well, how long? And they say, well, he's probably been here around 2 years. And then you go, okay, so now we're trying to deal with a situation.
This is the planning piece and to the question of what looks like good. How should people be, and Irish companies, and if they're coming in with a big global player, what do they need to be thinking about?
I think good is, as James has indicated, talking to people early. We'd have one or two of those larger players now that are deep in contracts to understand us, to say contracts with the NTA for procurement and how they're going to understand them, say, compared to their international or the UK contracts. It's early planning rather than after the event. Somebody coming to us after the event, and often it can be people that are further down the subcontractor chain where they've had people here, they've had labour that they've employed here, and they maybe need to regularise matters. It can get very expensive and very messy very quickly if they've left it. But, you know, it's like anything. Planning sort of gets you good performance. Poor planning leads to poor performance.
And James, what does good look like to you when, you know, Irish companies are linking up with international companies? Let me to rephrase it. What does bad look like?
Look, I mean, I think it goes back to that planning stage, getting all the key stakeholders that need to be there involved with everything up front. There's certain things that if you are retroactively correcting them, then, you know, they can be done with relative ease. But there's certain points that you just can't get out of. So you can't have someone illegally working here. That's a really fundamental point. That's a big, big no-no. If you were to, say, set up the payroll a few days late, you know, not good, but it's mitigatable. But I think what bad looks like is doing nothing, waiting a couple of years, and then all of a sudden you're trying to correct something in potentially multiple countries. And, you know, we've seen time and again examples of people being, you know, I've got cases in Ireland for a number of years, and you're unwinding in the UK completely and then winding up in Ireland, and the cost spiral. And a big part of this is, you know, these big infrastructure projects, we're saying that costs go up, but these are avoidable.
But there is an interest, Aidan. There is an interest from international companies. You're pounding the pavements, not just in Dublin, but in London and other countries. Yeah. There is an interest to get these people in here at the moment, because, as you say, we have the infrastructure need, and for the time being, we have the money.
Yes, I think on an international basis, we are very attractive. I think for some of the companies, especially that have been active in the UK, that market has possibly slowed a bit. Yeah. They're waiting to see as to where government spend will happen there.
Well, they're not quite as frothy as Ireland is at the moment. I can say that, maybe you can't. But yeah, our finances are in a good place.
Yeah, and ultimately, I suppose for anybody to come over to do work, they want to make sure that they have security of payment. They can see through the sort of various layers that if the government or the NTA has the money to deploy, then it will eventually make its way to them. So therefore, this becomes the attractive market to do something in. I mean, we talked about what good or what bad looks like. Bad can get pretty ugly fairly quickly. And sometimes we've had cases where clients have come to us, they maybe don't appreciate the relevant contracts tax or having people on the ground here. Then really, they are in the Irish market, and especially maybe UK companies have a certain, or feel they have a certain familiarity with Ireland, and say CIS in the UK, it must be the same here. And no, it's not. And they'll find out that some of these things don't just become a tax sort of issue where they'll eventually get it refunded. Sometimes it can turn into significant penalties where they haven't registered here, and that's not that's not going to be recoverable at all. So it's a real cost.
Yeah, and I would add on to that, and sort of dispelling a myth that people, and so many of my clients say, it's Ireland, it's the same as the UK. You know, we've got the same rules.
Like New Zealand, we've all the common law.
Yeah, and we have a couple of forms that have the same name, but they do different functions. Or, there is some special relationship with the UK and Ireland, particularly, but it's a different country. We're a different tax system.
But it's about having a framework in place for a long-term project, that you're not just, there's some money, there's something I can chase, let's do it properly, because these are long-term projects.
I think on some of the previous projects, say, Lewis would have been an example where some of the companies have come in, they've gone out again, come in for the various Lewis extensions. Now we're going to have Lewis Finglas and eventually Lewis to Lucan as well. I think the important part is maybe having the continuity of these, where one project is rolling onto another. The stop-start for a lot of these...
So it's not haphazard.
Yes, and it's not stop-start where you bring people in, then they're back out again, then they go to another contract, and then they have a myriad of different jurisdictions that they've all been in. Obviously, that's James' problem to fix, not mine.
Yeah, but that kind of feeds in. If it is that sort of stop-start, haphazard, as I described it, where are you getting the people from? They're not committed.
Yeah, exactly. And it goes back to that incentivizing people, giving them a direction in their career. So if you're going to be in Poland one day and Dublin the next, then you've got a different scenario.
So I don't want to put you on the spot, but I will. If there's one message that you want to get across in terms of how we can deliver these projects properly, what do we need to be thinking? Aidan, go.
I think we've come back to this planning piece. I mean, Irish governments, say, if you compare it to, say, France, Ireland probably has small government, France has big government. So if the French government wants to procure a very large infrastructure project, they probably have hundreds of engineers internally working within the government. We don't have that. So we rely on the external advisors, the external consultants to do that. So I think it's getting those right consultants. It's maybe leveraging off the other jurisdictions where this has happened. I mean, if you fly into London and you're getting from Heathrow and you're getting the Elizabeth Line or Crossrail, as it was originally called, I mean, a lot of that was built by Irish contractor companies and, you know, partnerships of, say, some of the large French groups that were involved in that. That's the piece that we can replicate. We don't need to reinvent the wheel here. We can leverage off some of the previous experience.
James?
So looking at Irish workforce, we need tens of thousands of people to be in Ireland to work this. That's going to need to have international labour. So I would say, connected to that budgeting, planning piece, to get the budgeting right. When you're starting to ensure that people are, say, financially not worse off than they would have been if they had have stayed at home, if you have to account for housing costs, if you have to cover additional tax costs, additional social security, those are so often forgotten. We see people, see businesses look at the cost of, say, labour, and that's what they budget for. But you can easily do multiples of that when you start taking account all of the international aspects. Yeah. So I'd say get that budget on the people side down.
People, projects, progress. There's an alliteration to end. Aidan and James, thank you very much for joining me here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Currency.News podcast. It pays to be curious.